You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us this week. If this is your first episode, welcome to the family. If you're returning, welcome back. We really appreciate you joining us, and we hope you make it a weekly habit by subscribing to the show through iTunes, through Stitcher, or wherever popular podcasts are subscribed to. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the drunk ET to my powdery dead ET, my dear friend Andy.
What's up, man?
Oh, Andy, speaking of dead
things. That was a good one.
Thank you. I have been watching this new Netflix show, Mindhunter. Have you taken a gander at Mindhunter?
No.
I would say it's average. The whole thing, fairly average. I did a little mini binge. I'm about seven episodes in. But it has made me look at everybody in the world as if they might be a serial killer.
Or a mindhunter, as they call them.
Do you know the premise of the show?
No, but I imagine that this show is about serial killers, but instead of serial killers, they are mindhunters.
No, the mindhunters are the FBI agents who are developing the science of kind of serial killer profiling for the first time.
Oh,
so it's set in the 70s. They're interviewing these killers that have already been apprehended without understanding that they are, in fact, serial killers. But now everyone to me... Oh, I've also been watching a lot of real-life serial killer interviews, so I've been really just disturbing the fuck out of myself.
And reading serial killer books.
And now I see serial...
really into Halloween.
And I see serial killers everywhere. The potential for serial killing has seeped into my existence like a ghost, you know?
Yeah.
Haunted by killers, the Drew Lazzaro story.
Now, the real test is going to be if you can hold the beast at bay inside of yourself.
That's what I'm afraid of. Will I become
the greatest serial killer?
The kind of the premise of the show is that the main character who is developing this this technique is also, you know, they're rubbing off on him a little bit.
He's becoming a Dexter.
No, I don't think it's quite the killing, but it's he's applying some of the practices that these killers have employed on in his personal life. So I'm afraid that I'm becoming imperceptibly more sociopathic than I was before.
That'll happen.
Are you worried about that since we share a studio space every week?
I am worried about it because there are a lot of sharp implements and melee weapons around us.
What would be the ritualistic way in which you killed your victims?
Probably with that drinking horn over there.
Every single one of them?
Yeah. They just were gored.
You would just jab it into them. You wouldn't like pour something down their throats until they drown?
That sounds very cruel.
You'd horn bong them to death?
Yeah.
Andy, our guest this week from the very popular podcast, Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, Miles was in the house.
Yeah, this is a great episode. I'm really excited about this. I'm a huge fan of this podcast, and this is a really awesome thing that he came on our show, and it was awesome to talk to him.
Yeah, he was a great guest for a number of reasons, but just... like I feel like I was learning a lot from someone who's had a lot of well-deserved success in the podcast game, and hearing about how they approach shaping the show, how that show has evolved, was really interesting for me. And I think that you guys will get a kick out of it too. I know that a lot of our listeners are listeners of theirs, and hopefully you enjoy our conversation. We talk some shop, we get into some comics, we play a little scenarios, and we listen to some great music. So enjoy our conversation with Miles of Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men on this week's episode of Hot Garbage. We'll just keep talking. Give it a little talk, Nate. Grab some volumes.
All right. Sample talking podcast voice, which I only sometimes remember to use.
Do you have one?
I kind of do.
You got
like
a go-to?
When I'm doing the X-Men thing, like it's like me, but just a little more like higher highs and lower lows. So I'll just be talking about how much I love Ann Nesenti's writing. It's kind of political, but that really works for me, so that's okay. And then there's fucking Liefeld! And it's just like double the animation, and that's my podcast
voice. Well, that's what I was curious about, too, because I feel like there is a very natural aspect of performance to your show.
So it's like, it doesn't ever feel forced, but it definitely seems like conscious and prepared, and there's definitely a specific energy behind that.
Yeah, and we like just sort of stumbled into that. I mean, we didn't know anything about podcasting when we were starting. Like, I'd listened to a couple episodes of Welcome to Night Vale, and that was my entire experience with
it. That was it?
That was
so you were not a podcast listener?
No, not really at all. Like, I think I listened to some Skeptic's Guide to the Universe here and there, but certainly nothing like what we were doing. And so when we started doing it, we basically had Bobby Roberts just giving us advice and editing our shit to make us sound vaguely professional, but we just sort of figured it all out as we went.
Well, then what was the impetus for getting started in the first place? If you didn't have any, if you weren't drawing on like a love for the form, what was the origin story?
Basically, so Jay and I were married for like almost 13 years mm-hmm. and together for a million years before that. And so we would just sit around talking about X-Men endlessly anyway, and we amused ourselves. So we narcissistically figured, hey, maybe somebody else would be into that too. And I guess a couple people were. So that worked out.
Definitely. Yeah. You definitely have a podcast voice, though. I've heard you in the comic shop at Things from Another World from across the room. And I'm like, oh my God, Miles is here.
Right. Recognizable.
It's weird. When you listen to somebody's podcast enough, you kind of feel like you know them.
Totally, yeah.
It's weird. Do you ever have people come up to you and ask you really crazy questions?
Usually, no, people are usually pretty chill. Like, sometimes they'll have really intense continuity questions that you can tell they've just been saving up. But it's never been anybody like asking me any weird personal shit, which baffles me because, you know, you'd think the odds would be somebody would, but no, lucked out.
Which is why we have you here tonight.
Okay, so I'm definitely curious about how this evolves from a craft point of view, just pretty selfishly because we do a show as well. But what's the biggest change from when you were first starting, not knowing what the hell you were doing, till now?
I think we do way, way more research now, and I don't know that we actually need to, because we got by all right just skimming over stuff back in the day. But I think like as we've gotten closer to the material and more invested in the material, and also are, you know, slowing down the pace of our coverage of it, as there are five X books out that we're dividing our attention between, like, I just feel like we can't miss a detail, at least not an important one.
Right.
We're also just waiting for the inevitable, you know, person to come into the comments of an episode. Well, actually, and that's fine. They should totally do that. But nonetheless, if we can preempt them, it's a feeling of triumph.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's just so much. You had like the future side on it because you're talking about stuff that you already know the outcome of, these storylines. So you know the little things to look for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, more or less with certain eras, definitely. Like, you know, we're coming into the early 90s where the last time I read them, I was an excited sugar high 10-year-old. And so I kind of remember it, but the details are sort of nonsense to begin with anyway, since the writers and editors were switching around so frequently.
Yeah, it was all over the place.
Oh, it totally was. But that's part of where, like, that manic energy comes from that I really dig.
Okay, let's see. What do you think makes a good podcast? What do you think makes it successful and makes it work?
Okay, that's a really big question. For me,
I'm hoping it'll take about 40 minutes.
Okay, let's make it happen. I'll see what I can do. So for me, I like something with consistency. I'm not saying it has to be the same formula every time, although there is a certain comfort to having, you know, certain features that you know you should you can expect. But people who are going to be showing up every time and showing up kind of like with their A game every time, I hate that freaking corporate buzzword, but I can't think of anything better right now. Like, knowing that, for instance, with my show, that you're going to get Jay and Miles being Jay and Miles, you're going to get, you know, the same type of nerding out over the dumbest shit you can think of in a comic, but also us like working way more social commentary than was probably ever intended in there. Like, that's one of the things I go for. Beyond that, I mean,
and you have a solid continuing storyline too that people are following.
For us, yeah. I'm not saying a podcast necessarily needs that.
That helps for sure.
Yeah.
That also can bite you because it's hard to jump in, you know, unless you know the context of what they're talking about.
Totally. Like with our show, I mean, our goal was initially to detangle X-Men, but I'm realizing now with like the sheer number of in-jokes and references we have, if someone just came into like our current episode as their first one, they might not have any idea what the hell was going on. So we're thinking the next show is going to be Jay and Miles explain the X-Men, and eventually willing to explain that, and it'll just like be endlessly recursive.
Well, that is definitely a sort of a meta commentary on comics. You've got to sometimes reboot and give people an entry point, right?
Exactly.
You know, if you get a deep mythology, as your show does after 170 episodes, you really got to give people a point where they can jump back in.
So, okay, so we just need to do like the comics industry is especially doing these days and just do a number one like every
That's
maybe
right. That's
few
exactly
months.
Exactly right.
Jay and Miles Rebirth.
Yeah, every 48 episodes is a series. You put a series wrap on it, and you start with issue one or issue 00.
I mean, we've actually considered that. I don't think we actually will, because part of what being X-Men continuity nerds is really enjoying just that endless build.
Yeah.
It would probably be a better call in some ways, but wisdom.
No, I would not do it. I was joking. I think you should stick definitely to the format that's been so successful. I think that the depth of knowledge required to... I mean, it just forces people to go back to number one. And get on from day one.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of a podcast called The Adventure Zone, the McElroy brothers. Sorry, I stumbled on that. They play Dungeons and Dragons with their dad, and it is incredible. But it's a hard one to jump into because, there's like 100 episodes of them playing this. And to jump into their campaign just willy-nilly seems crazy.
Okay, this is interesting. I just thought of you acquired a taste for podcasts since you've been doing one?
I have, yeah, although I haven't acquired very much time. Like, I listen while I commute. My job is doing IT, and I just can't do anything else verbal while I'm doing that.
Yeah.
So it's basically, it's just driving every day and, like, the occasional laundry session. So, yeah, I listen to a few. The one I probably follow most closely is actually another local one called Tighten Up the Defense, like TITAN. They cover the Defenders from the 70s and the new Teen Titans from the 80s.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we do, but definitely funnier and less detail obsessed than we are.
Good.
That I can't freaking get enough of. We like sort of mutually inspire each other's this ridiculous mutual appreciation society thing. I still follow Welcome to Night Vale. I love that shit. It's this beautiful blend of like slightly creepy and lots of feelings that works very well for me.
Well, because that description of that McElroy Brothers podcast with the D&D, like, it's got a solid hook, right? That's a continuing story. But what makes that work? Like, what makes that?
Oh man, the thing about this one works so well is they grew into their characters. At first, it was kind of a joke, and they were just playing, and then they started to feel for their characters and started doing things, not necessarily that they would do, but what their characters would do. And Griffin, the dungeon master of this game, did such a great job of wrapping it up, and like, there was such a great payoff on that podcast after listening to it for countless hours to get a concise ending to their first campaign. It was so beautiful. I cried twice listening to this podcast.
That's awesome.
You openly wept in front of my children, just like ugly sobbing. It was so beautiful.
Full out sobs?
Yeah, it was great. With headphones on.
Wow. That is disturbing for a child to see, but what a powerful piece of media.
Yeah, I was clapping. It was great.
Oh, man. Well, that's one of the things I love about nerdy podcasting is in this era, like, we're allowed to bring up this nerdy shit and be totally earnest and sincere about it.
Yeah.
And, like, have all the feelings and have it, like, change how we look at the world. I mean, one of the most influential things I ever read was freaking Scott Pilgrim Volume 6. Like, that shit still stuck with me.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
That actually did. I did get misty-eyed throughout Scott Pilgrim. That thing really hit home.
It was so good.
It was well done.
Yeah. And I had, like, I did what you waited a long time for number six too. Like there was a pretty big gap as I recall, at least when I was reading it, like I caught up really quickly and was waiting for number six.
They did kind of a strange thing with that comic where they had it in black and white originally and then they really released it all in color.
I don't think I like the color. I think that I prefer the black and white. I like those little the trades that are the smaller size, the smaller trim size. The color, I don't know. Didn't add anything for me. The black and white really works perfectly.
That was one of those times when the Portland Library System was kick ass because they were getting those right when they came out, and I would just go and pick them up from the library like once a month. It was so nice. You get the new Scott Pilgrim.
Oh man, yeah. I keep needing to check out the color ones myself. For me, my only complaint with the black and white, there's a character named Lisa, and without color, she looks just like Ramona half the time. It was very confusing.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, you had to it'd take a couple panels before you figured it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish more people remembered that libraries had so many freaking comics. Like, you could just read comics at a library and be fine. They're just right there and nobody knows about it.
I did it for a good 5 years. It was great. It made you wait a while. So stuff would be coming out and you'd have to not look at the trades and, like, see what was actually happening, you know, because...
You just kind of reset your own timeline to, you know, 6 months prior.
Exactly. And which is what I'm doing now with Marvel Unlimited. See, now we're just getting into me talking about my comic reading habits.
Well, the hook from our podcast is at least ostensibly music. So we should probably talk a little bit about music, Miles. I know you brought some tracks to share, but give us a little bit of background for you as a music listener. What's you know, spinning on your deck these days?
So my go-to, now I should preface this by saying I am not nearly as deeply into music as any of you guys are, like, at all, but...
You might be surprised.
Okay, well...
For the host of a music podcast. Take it or leave it.
My go-to these days is has been for a while power metal. We were talking about earnest goofiness, about nerdy shit, and power metal is that for me. It's not afraid to get really excited about dragons and friendship, and hey, those are things I like.
Yeah.
I guess I probably started with that. I don't know. My metal started with Metallica, like it did for so many. I had my Discman on the school bus back in middle school, getting really excited.
Was it the Black Album?
It was actually the much maligned Load that I got started on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I will stand up for that. Yeah.
Until it sleeps, everybody.
Wow.
The weird country twinge. I don't know. It kind of worked for me. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've been listening to a lot of like synth wavy 80s stuff. I think Stranger Things turned me on to Survive, and Survive turned me on to like Time Cop 1983 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is a perfect time for you to come into that kind of music because it is exploding.
It's half of Bandcamp. Right now.
Exactly. I've been like dipping a toe into Bandcamp more seriously, and it's just all synth wave.
It's so good. There's so much. Time Cop is great. Yeah.
Awesome. Also, the famous Time Cop 1983. There's nothing bad about that. No, sorry, you were really saying. Cool name.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, what was the first track that you brought that you'd like to share this evening?
So the first track I brought was actually the only one that does qualify as local, and that is from my friend Quinn, also known, among other things, as Kid Apocalypse. He was actually just at a listener meetup we had after Rose City Comic Con. He raps as a new semi-obscure character named Evan Sabaner. He's a young clone of Apocalypse, and this is a track called Return of the King, where it's Kid Apocalypse having sort of a rap battle with actual Apocalypse about whether he's going to turn into actual Apocalypse and be evil. And I love it so much, and maybe it'll make sense to other people and maybe it won't, but let's listen to it anyway.
Yeah, let's check that out. That sounds incredible. So here's a little bit of Kid Apocalypse.
Whisper circulating, the return of the king gets the thoughts all percolating like the Lord of the Ring, bringing back the big man with a capital A, the Apocalypse Prime, like the dawn of new day. It ain't nothing but that, just a horrible rumor. The X-Men took him down, cut him out like a tumor. Count of one thing, and of this I'm really sure, there can be only one, and I'm in Sabaneur. Little whelp, it's best you bow down. With the knowledge that you lack, we could fill a whole town. It's inevitable, kid, you can't stop the ascension. Soon you'll see the true path, and you'll know my intention. Cause evil is a word, just a meager point of view. In time you will see, it is the right thing to do. Don't let the vocal masses cloud up your judgment. Lambs to the slaughter, just need a little nudge, kid. I want none of this, you're just a voice in my head. You're the ghost of a monster that's long since been dead. I refuse to believe that it's all in my nature. I have grown to believe that I am more than my maker.
Every age needs a ruler, the invisible hand. I will bring about order to cleanse this whole land. I'm the one true path, the only mutant messiah. First comes the fear, and then you'll be a pariah.
Well, I guess I can't admit that it doesn't seem fair that the cloth that we're cut from is starting to tear. Man, even Cyclops has been branded a terrorist. There's a mirror on the wall, then ain't no one the fairest. All I want is some peace, just a moment of solace. If we don't get no mercy, I won't show them the smallest. I lost all my stock, already cashed in my shares. Here's my final 2 cents, go call someone who cares.
So that was a little bit of Kid Apocalypse. That was amazing. Thanks for sharing that. I assume there's a lot of references in there that people will really latch on to immediately.
So Kid Apocalypse is like he's a millennial in the comic.
Oh.
Has he or do you think he would be a good DJ?
As a millennial?
The character himself. Do you think Kid Apocalypse would be a DJ?
I feel like he would really get into it, yeah. Evan Sabaneur, as opposed to N. Sabaneur, he gloms onto pop culture as hard as he can. He's trying to be everything Apocalypse isn't. And so if you don't want to be like a grandiose, voice-filtered supervillain with your initial on your belt and a great big spaceship that you fly around in and four-themed horsemen, like... Yeah, I feel like...
That sounds
a lot like
a Deadmau5 concert, too. Like everything you just described. So, like, he could be a killer.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is he a villain? Is Kid Apocalypse in the comics not a villain?
He's not a villain.
He was technically a villain for, like, two issues back in Axis, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah, that was weird.
Because I feel like all DJs should have a villain persona. Like, if you are a famous DJ like Deadmau5 or, like, DJ Shadow or fucking Diplo, you should cultivate a villain persona, a cartoonishly villain persona.
Well, there are multiple really high-level DJs wearing weird LED masks right now. There's Marshmallow, there's Deadmau5, there's another dude that's fucking like an emoji face or some shit. They're just...
Oh, the emoji face. That's not going to age well.
There's Wotan and the Wicked and the Divine, I'm just saying, if anybody's reading that.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, you know, even if you yourself are not going to cultivate the villain persona as a DJ, as long as you have that looming dark destiny villain sort of above you, like hovering over your shoulders like some giant Sith specter, for me, I think that would be
adequate.
That's
fine. Sure. That is definitely adjacent to being a villain yourself, and that would be definitely an acceptable substitute for personal villainy. I just want a cloak of villainy around my DJs. I'm not a big DJ fan to begin with, but I'm not listening to a single other DJ that doesn't have an evil villain persona. Yeah.
The line has been drawn.
Yeah.
I want to hear Dr. Claw drop some hard swamp romp dubstep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the dude's like, what, made of sound at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Just one hand scratching.
Does that not exist?
I don't think so.
Dr. Claw, it's right there.
I'm sure there's a million Dr. Claws.
So, Miles, what do you hope is the future of the podcast? Where would you like it to go? What are your ambitions for this project now that you've been rolling along so successfully for 4 years?
The future of Jane and Miles Explain the X-Men. I mean, honestly, like, we have so much material to cover. Like, we just got to 1991. It's 2017. And there's been horrifying amounts of X-Men in between. I kind of feel like just doing what we've been doing, that's what we enjoy. That's what listeners seem to enjoy. I mean, if we were to make any changes, like, I would definitely enjoy having more creators on, maybe more creators actually talking about their own work. That's something that, like, we've been trying to get Louise Simonson on the show to talk about her many, many years run of X-Factor and New Mutants for ages. That would be super rad. But beyond that, I think one of the things I like about Explain the X-Men, I was talking about consistency in the podcast I listen to. I kind of like it as a podcaster, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What has it been like to, now that you've reached this level where you can have people like Chris Claremont on the show, people that you've been referencing and talking about for this whole time?
Yeah, that's crazy. That'd be like us interviewing the Taco Bell Chihuahua.
Right. I recommend that. You totally should. Yeah. Make it happen.
Yeah, when is like my interview with 311? That's what, you know, that's the equivalent right there. When is Mark, Nick Hexum coming on the
Mark
show?
When's Mark Hoppus going to stop by?
I don't know why you painted me with this Blink-182
brush. You're a huge Blink-182 fan.
I'm not a when did that come up?
I don't know. I thought like somewhere along the line you told me you really like Blink-182.
I think that
the Dude
two
Ranch
good
was
albums.
Like top five album of all time.
I don't know. I would never use those words. I would never rank. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You're allowed to do that. It's just not my personal thing. But what has that experience been like? And I don't know. How did you kind of prepare yourself for that level of engagement?
We never expected any of that. Like, we've been trying to catch up with ourselves from like our third or so episode when we realized people were actually listening. So as far as getting creators like Claremont, like, you know, we just did a live episode in New York with him and Louise Simonson both.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Thanks.
And we've just been sort of doing the fake it till you make it thing, like pretending we're actually competent, not terrified fans. Right. It so far seems to be working okay. Like, I don't think anybody actively hates us. So, but yeah, I mean, just realizing that the people who have created the shit we love are just people. Like, there's nothing that sets them apart as these, you know, superhuman immortal types. Like, they're just awesome, nerdy people themselves.
Yeah, Claremont came across as just a huge fan of the X-Men and not a fan of Jean Grey's current outfit.
He did have a lot to say about that and a number of other things in that live episode.
Turns out doesn't like intro pages. Hmm? Yeah, he wants a steady narrative like old school comics. And I appreciate that. I totally get where he's coming from. But man, he had a lot to say about it.
Was interviewing something that you have always felt comfortable with? Was that because it's not that wasn't always the intention of the show, right? It was to have, you know, interview segments and stuff like that. It was really about you and Jay discussing the timeline, correct?
Exactly, yeah. And honestly, interviews have always been the hardest part for me.
Yeah.
Like, that's just something I didn't have any experience with. And it's gotten a little easier as we've gone, but we still don't do it often enough for me to feel like any kind of a natural. I think the first time we had somebody on was Greg Rucka in, like, the 7th episode of the show talking about the Cyclops book he was doing, because Greg was somebody that Jay and I already knew. It was just like having, you know, a guest on the show, like a friend as much as a creator. And as we started to get people who we didn't know, like writers and artists who found us by listening to our show, like while they drew X-Men or whatever, it was just, it was really hard to wrap my brain around that. But I mean, you don't say no to that shit. So of course we had them on.
Yeah.
What was the first moment where you had an awareness that there was this audience out there?
That's a good question. I guess it was when we launched our Patreon campaign. You know, we used that for crowdfunding. And once we realized that people had just burned through our first couple stretch goals that we didn't think they would hit ever, like within the first week or so, I think that's when we realized that, A, people were actually listening to the show. We'd accidentally found this niche that needed to be filled, or, well, needed maybe too strong a word.
Need is not strong enough, I would say.
Well, perhaps. The X-Men are really confusing, it turns out. But also realizing that we'd gotten in over our heads, like, way more than we thought we would. And at that
point, there a self-consciousness that set in once you realized that there was actually someone listening on the other end of all this?
I don't think we had time to be self-conscious. Yeah. Like, we were so busy just, you know, adhering to this weekly schedule that we foolishly chose. And I'm still impressed you guys do the same. Like, anytime I see a weekly podcast, like, my hat is off.
Well, that was the one thing. We did not have any pretense about being good at this or preparing ourselves to be good or anything like that. But we knew that if we did it every single week, that was something we could hang our hats on.
That's one thing I can do, is I could commit to do something.
Yes. And now, almost 200 episodes later, I can say we're pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're acceptable at podcasts. And I would say, listen to the last 4 or 5.
Yeah. Our last 4 or 5 are real good.
Yeah, real good.
This is not one where you have to start with number one for it to make any goddamn sense.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, we can catch up, but we talk about Taco Bell frequently.
Yep.
And that's probably the only recurring theme.
Yeah. We kind of ran out of stories about me shitting my pants.
Oh, yeah. It used to be that's gone. Pants shitting stories.
Okay. That went about 100 episodes.
That sort of dovetails gone with the Taco Bell thing. So.
Yes. It does. And yeah. Andy has an intestinal issue. So mm-hmm. He had the perfect trifecta for shitting your pants. He was kind of like a shit your pants story generator. Mm-hmm. But he's leveled off because, you know.
And that part of the show is over.
We're like that chapter of your life. It's over.
For now, I've been really pushing the envelope lately. So we'll see what happens.
Are you bringing it back?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of bringing it back, Andy, why don't you play a little DJ, a little villain DJ, and drop a hot jam on us?
I'm going to drop one once I find it. Let's see. Let's dig into the old iPod. Oh, man.
Andy's using like an iPod Touch from a pawn shop these days.
Yeah. This is an iPhone 5.
Oh,
just
the 5.
I'm just using it
kind
as
of
an
a
iPod.
Forgotten model, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It works for what I need. Ethereal C is a doom metal band from Portland that I really have been digging. You should check this out. This song is off of their new album, A Universe Far From Ours, and it's called Get Stoned. Run away, feel the haze of the ever crashing.
as a Florida, you know, as Florida as your home, have you, did you take Tom Petty's death especially hard as a fellow Floridian?
I mean, I enjoy Tom Petty. I actually didn't even know he was a Floridian until he died randomly. Florida,
he kept
like,
it a secret.
Florida has no, at least the part I was from, really no cultural identity. It's just sort of where everybody goes to retire from all over the place.
I can't put a finger on what, if you told me a band was from Florida, I wouldn't have any imagination for what they might sound like.
I think Against Me, This Bike Is a Pipe Bomb, like that Gainesville.
Less
like,
than Jake.
Like punk, you know, Florida is punk rock to me. Also, Miami. Miami's like all about like bass music and like Latin tinged hip hop.
And very specific Will Smith songs.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Party in the City, where the heat is on.
The heat is on there all the time.
Miles, are you down to play a little game with us this evening?
Let's make it happen.
It's not hard.
Would you like to play
it's really
game?
Just about learning learning how you think about things. It's a game we call Scenarios in Stereo. I'm going to give you a situation and pose a question to you, and you're just going to walk us through your thinking as you come to a decision about which scenario you would create for yourself.
I love this plan. Let's do it.
Okay. So the first question I have is, if you could prove definitively the existence of one contemporary monster, like the Loch Ness Monster, which one would you choose?
Oh, man, that is an excellent question, and my brain is going in like 10,000 directions at once.
I know. I have an answer, but I would like to hear yours first.
Okay, well, where my brain goes, first off, we were talking about places I've lived, and I have not lived where this is from, but the Mothman.
Oh, Mothman's cool as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly because...
Because of that movie with Richard Gere, I know.
I enjoyed that movie a surprising amount.
Yes,
I will stand
behind
it.
More than you should enjoy a Richard Gere movie.
Exactly. But no, it's just so freaky looking and so unlike any of like the Universal monsters, any of the things we typically think of as you know, various cryptids that people are taking pictures of. Like, it's just bonkers. It would get people to really rethink a lot of their assumptions, and also I appreciate things that have eyeballs on their chests and no heads.
That is an amazing answer, because while I was trying to formulate what my answer would be, I was thinking I would want to prove the existence of the creepiest thing. The thing that would, like, if it was real, would deeply unnerve the most people. And I think that's probably the right answer.
I thought you were going to go from Florida with the
swamp
skunk
ape.
The skunk ape.
Oh, the skunk ape.
I mean, skunk apes are cool, but like the whole Yeti, Bigfoot, skunk ape, like they're all kind of a kind. I like the Mothman because there's really nothing like
him. No, he's like like the Jersey Devil. He's like a one-off, or like Spring-Heeled Jack. Or it's like, there's one of that.
Yeah, the Sasquatch mythology has never really done it for me. I'm not, if that was discovered, I wouldn't be like, whoa. Actually, I probably would. I take it back. I would.
It's not impressive.
Sorry, Scott. Yeah, it would be great. It would be
for
great
me,
if that happened.
It would be that one north, northeastern sea monster, Champ.
Champ.
Yeah. You know about Champ?
I do know Champ.
I remember reading that book as a kid.
Lake Champlain.
I would love to go swim with Champ.
This is I would choose that Congolese, like, brontosaurus, apatosaurus, the Mokilimembe.
Have you guys heard about that?
No, uh-uh.
Have you seen the movie Baby? Do you remember the movie Baby?
Yes,
it was about that creature.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I remember seeing this dinosaur special that was hosted by Christopher Reeves when he could walk and was alive. And it featured a whole segment about people who had claimed to see this dinosaur in the Congolese jungle. It always sounded amazing to me.
I just need to see this documentary, mainly because every time I see Christopher Reeves, I get happier about life, and this is a thing of his I haven't seen.
He was great. He was a very capable, more than capable, host of a dinosaur show, pitched at, like, 11-year-olds.
Yes.
He was the right person for that. Okay.
Was this dinosaur aggressive?
I think that in sort of the local mythology of it, it is aggressive, but I think as an animal, it would be non-aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just don't want to fuck with it, you know.
Yeah. Keep a respectful distance. As with all nature. Okay, Miles, second question for you.
All right.
Somewhat related. If you could be abducted by aliens, and understanding that you would not be believed by anyone, but you'd be basically unscathed, would you do it just for the experience?
I mean, I think I would. I'm a social creature, so the not being believed, that would be rough. Might go a little crazy, but at the same time, the chance to gain that much knowledge and perhaps, like, stealth apply it to the world. Like, hey, I just had this crazy idea about, I don't know, quantum physics. Just bear with me here, and then maybe somebody smart could listen to that. They can claim it as their own idea. That's fine. Or alternately, my mind could be shattered. I could develop this hatred for humanity as compared to the benevolent, intelligent, and wise aliens, and I would work to destroy us from within similarly subtly. it's kind of a toss-up.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I like the sleeper agent move.
Yeah, I'm pretty easily influenced. I'm not going to lie. So, like, you know, heads, humanity prospers. Tails, were annihilated in a self-inflicted fiery inferno.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Didn't think about that either. I would think, too, the other risk that you run, you have a very, people can't see, but you have a very specific look to you. And if you come back from an alien abduction spouting off about kind of your alien experience, that you have it has a chance to be taken the wrong way.
I mean, these are not necessarily the hair and beard of mainstream credibility. You're right. You're not wrong.
Yeah. You actually look like an alien abductee. That's what I was saying.
Got that crazed look in my eyes beneath all the fur.
You're like young Alan Moore.
Yes.
I've had that comparison made, and like I have such mixed feelings about it. He's a brilliant, brilliant man, but he also legitimately believes in a snake god, thinks he's a wizard, and hates the comics industry, which I'm not going to say he's necessarily wrong in any of those statements.
If anyone in this
those
world
are unpopular
can do
opinions,
real
though.
Magic, it's Alan Moore.
Exactly, yeah. Like,
he's
I don't believe in that stuff.
A dark magician.
But for him. Maybe Grant Morrison, except his is just fueled entirely by... I think Grant Morrison's magic would be fueled entirely by drugs, and Alan Moore's entirely by, like, weird sex.
Yeah, definitely. And blood.
Weird sex magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to see them having a wizard's duel.
But not blood sugar sex magic.
It might be. He might be hanging out with Anthony Kiedis under a bridge.
Okay, Miles, next question. You're being forced under penalty of death to shoot yourself non-fatally on some part of your body with a .22 caliber pistol. Which body part would you choose?
Okay, so I was at a restaurant a couple of nights ago, and there was this like 19-year-old...
And this was posed to me.
and this was not, but it's relevant, I think. There was this 19-year-old waiter kid who was nervous because he was getting his first tattoo and was asking what it was like. And so we were telling him about how, you know, it's actually much easier in like the fleshy parts of you. It's over the bone where it's a real bastard. And so I think I would go with that logic. Mm-hmm. So like maybe like the meaty part of my thigh, I mean, it's going to suck regardless.
Yes.
But with there, you know, it's probably not going to damage anything permanently, I hope. Mm-hmm. Like the muscles are hopefully broad enough that they're going to survive. And the only real downside is that then that's a scar that I'm not going to be able to show off unless I'm wearing short shorts in the summer.
Right.
Me personally, I would open my mouth and go straight cheek to cheek right through like a doll.
You know.
You'd go through the mouth.
Yeah. But like right between my open mouth, right between my teeth.
That sort of happened to that dude in Legion in the TV show, and that part wasn't so bad. What happened to him after was much worse, but that part didn't seem so terrible.
Yeah, that seemed like an okay way to shoot yourself in the face.
Yeah, but you don't have to shoot yourself in the face. You have all like, why would you choose the face?
I don't know. Face heals fast, right?
There's lots of, you know, blood vessels and stuff, right?
Face heals fast. You're right.
It's that old adage. Yeah. It's like my grandma used to say, your face heals fast.
That's why
shoot yourself in the mouth.
Face.
Yeah. I mean,
my other thought was just like right through a pinky toe.
Yeah, but then your toe's like fucked forever at
it's
that
just
point.
Gone.
Yeah, you just take your toe off.
Just fuck that toe.
I thought about using your logic, I would go for the flabby underarm.
Oh, armpit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or just like, you know, like the
jiggly part.
The grandmother bicep that I'm working on cultivating right now. Yeah.
Okay. Or you could just like pull your ear out real wide and shoot yourself like a piercing.
I want to avoid my face. Given I have the option of shooting myself anywhere.
You could have like a double-aught piercing in your ear. Just in 1 second, less than a second.
I mean, why wouldn't you? It'd be a shame to waste that opportunity.
Yeah, that's a free piercing.
If you had to bet your life on the outcome of one competition between you and a nemesis, which game would you choose?
Well, okay, clarifying question. Do I have to win? Can I bet against myself?
No, because then you have to win.
Oh, okay. That makes it way harder because I'm really bad at a lot of stuff and I could just have a champion. Okay, so and my opponent, like, is it going to be a randomly selected person or?
I would say it's just someone it's kind of randomly selected, but you can imagine that their skill set lies in the fat part of the bell curve. So they're not going to be exceptional, but they're not going to be terrible. They're probably going to be average at stuff.
Okay.
But you are rolling the dice that you're going to get this weird outlier for whichever game you happen to choose.
Okay,
he's getting the Mr. Sinister of X-Men villains.
Oh, man. Okay.
So he's difficult, but he's all right.
But very stylish, at least.
Very stylish.
Well, okay, I mean, I guess I would have to go for, and this is actually kind of like a soul-searching question here. Like, I'm staring at myself in this dark mirror, you know. What makes me exceptional? Does anything make me exceptional? Am I really as good as I think I am at anything?
I know. When you have to risk your life on it, then you start thinking hard.
And then I got to say, in like that last moment of life, if I lost, I would feel so fucking stupid. Like, oh, why didn't I choose something else?
Yeah.
But I think I would have to go for X-Men continuity simply because I've spent so much time thinking about it.
Yeah, an X-Men continuity competition. That's true.
I mean, this would make for a really weird, like, Saw sequel. I think a lot of people, their eyes would just sort of glaze over once we were getting to, like, okay, so the deal is Rachel Summers is Mother Ascani, but Mother Ascani is not the same as Ascani. That was actually Jen Ascani, even though she was called Ascani, who was sent back in time, as it turned out later, by Rachel Summers to kidnap her baby alternate universe half-brother Nathan Christopher Charles Ascani Dayspring Summers. You know, once it gets to that point, people are like leaving the theater. Mm-hmm. But I will not die is the important part.
That's true. You'll be the... Who was the guy who lived at the end of Saw? Was that Cary Elwes?
I think his name was Saw. The movie was about him.
John Saw.
John Saw.
John Saw.
Was he really named? I know he's a Jigsaw. Jigsaw. Not John Saw. What's his nickname?
What a smart name. I didn't even realize.
I've never seen a single one of those.
There's a new one coming out that's a prequel, and it looks fucking tortury.
Oh man,
they're all pretty tortury.
This one had a bunch of people with chains on, hooked up two chainsaws, being pulled at the chains. What?
Wow. Who built that? I mean, okay, I know who built that, but still, who built that?
So in your timeline life-saving competition, is it just trivia, or like how is that game structured? How would it be structured for your best advantage? Would you have to like put things in order, or like how would...
I think for me, my advantage would lie in turning it into a semi-coherent narrative, because that shit is not a fully coherent narrative in the comics. You kind of have to fudge it, yeah.
You really have to thread a needle to get that all together.
Exactly.
Especially when you're talking about the exact part you're talking about right now that makes no sense unless you've read all of it.
Right. And even then, it just contradicts itself left and right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd feel pretty good if your life was on the line for that. I would feel like you'd get through.
I hope so. Although I'm really troubled that we live in a world where one's life can be on the line just because of X-Men trivia. I knew 2017 was dark, but yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's not getting any brighter.
For me, it would be a hatchet tossing.
You just roll. I think I would roll the dice on just like, let's fucking like literally throw some dice. Let's see who gets the highest total. Like I wouldn't want the pressure of having to perform at something that I think I'm good at. I would just all right.
I would be like, we're going to throw batarangs at that tree.
Pick some up at Andy and Bax. They have a wide selection, at least three kinds.
That's some pretty nice batarangs.
But now I'm curious. Are you actually good at hatchet throwing? Because that would be awesome.
I'm not good at it, but I'm not bad at it.
So you're probably much better than the average person. You have some pretty good odds here.
Yeah, I do it when I can. I had more time to practice, I think it could really excel.
You're a casual but aspiring hatchet tosser.
If you drew me as an opponent, I've literally never thrown an axe.
This is kind of bad to say, but like, is as my assassin cred goes... Not real good at throwing blades. I'm better at drowning people.
Well,
so a nautical assassin.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the last scenario I have for you, and I think this is a tough one. What is the minimum reward you would need in exchange for introducing yourself for the rest of your life as follows? Hi, I'm Miles, and I love to juggle to every person you meet.
I mean,
what is the minimum that you would need in exchange for that introduction?
I'm not going to lie. It wouldn't take much. Now, I would actually take up juggling if I had to do this, just so I wasn't bullshitting. And then if they asked for a demonstration, I could do it.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, he's no poser.
It would change your life.
It would.
That's what you're saying.
You know, I mean, and juggling is not easy. I've tried it. I'm terrible at it. So that would take some time. Minimum reward. Well, okay. So here's the thing. Like, if I could bluff this, if I could be like, yeah, basically, I would like you to... I don't know, guarantee decent access to healthcare to every American, and I could convince them that that was indeed the minimum that was required.
That's what I'm saying.
If it was that important to them.
If you have
to
challenge yourself, like cosmically, whoever is giving you this reward knows whether it is in your heart the least that you would accept.
Okay, well, if they can read my heart, then they would know that I'm a total pushover, and I don't have a lot of dignity or shame.
It's just free laundry detergent for life.
You know, or just, I like Snickers bars. Like, if people were to just give me one of those every couple of weeks, I don't want to overdo it. Like, that would probably be enough right there.
You get one Snickers bar every 3 weeks, and everyone you meet, hi, I'm Miles, and I love to juggle.
That's all it takes.
I'd get to be theatrical and a little goofy. It would be impetus to learn to juggle, which I've always kind of wanted to do. Like, I'm not seeing a huge downside here.
I would love to see you have to introduce yourself to four or five people in a row.
Yeah, just every single one. Yeah.
Well, see, if I could just mess with the cadence a little bit. Like when I'm doing Blondie's One Way or Another at karaoke, it's kind of a repetitive song. Mm-hmm. So you got to use different voices for every little repetition of it. So if it's, and I love to juggle the first time, then the second time could be, and I love to juggle! Then I could do it like in falsetto after that. I mean, there are options.
I suppose you could, I could be flexible with that in this weird punishment. So Snickers bar. I mean, that is less than I suspected.
I really satisfied.
I thought we might quibble over things like, you know, $1,000 or I thought it would be low, but I didn't think Snickers bar.
I mean, well, okay, I should point out, like, I was with a partner for a couple decades who was super allergic to peanuts, so I couldn't have Snickers bars. So it's not just a Snickers bar. Like, there's some symbolism here as well. There's some missed opportunity to make up for.
Gotcha. There's some ground to cover. Well, I think you successfully navigated scenarios and stereo, Miles. And it is time for a little bit more music. What is the second track that you'd like to share this evening?
Okay, so of my three, this is my non-X-Men related one and is tangentially sort of local. I used to see more music, which is to say damn near any, a few years back. I used to go to metal shows in Portland a few times a year. And for some reason, this Canadian, initially folk metal, they're less folk these days, band called Blackguard was at every freaking show I ever went to. And they had incredible energy. Like, they managed to get a pit going more quickly and enthusiastically than any band I'd seen in the theaters, including the headliners, and they made me really happy, and they used some old-timey music to have a drinking song that is way screamier than most drinking songs I've heard. So this is that. This is This Rounds on Me by Blackguard.
Awesome. Let's check it out.
Let's go.
Miles, I'm curious, when you think about putting together your show and all the work that goes into it, what are some areas that you focus on for improvement? What are some things that you would like to see evolve about the show and get better?
I think what he means is, how can we make our show better?
Give us a very specific roadmap to success.
Well, for a podcast that is mine, but not necessarily identical to mine, so for me, I'm an obsessive, like, preparer. Our show has these, like, 10-page outlines that we do every episode off of. It's kind of ridiculous, but for me, keeping more of a casual flow, having more like digressions, more personal stories and stuff like that, that's where I feel like when I listen to a podcast, I really connect with a host. And that's something that you guys do really well. And I'd like to be able to do more. I'd like to be less tied down by having to get like every little continuity detail exactly right. And more just
do less research, Miles.
There we go.
Stop doing research at all.
There were some mutants. They had some names. I don't know. Definitely some powers. But anyway, they were bad news and the X-Men fought them and it was great. So, Jay, what do you think about unicorns?
Solid podcast.
Yeah, you've been following the continuity between your ears. You got to follow the continuity here in your chest.
He's pointing to his heart. That's right.
One of the last lines of Dark City, you almost directly paraphrased. One of my favorite movies.
Huh. Never seen Dark
City. Pulled it out of the ether.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
done.
Out there. It's part of the zeitgeist.
It's like what's his name said. There are only a few different kinds of stories. There's, you know, man versus nature. There's Dark City versus podcasting advice. It's pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The classic hero's journey.
But yeah, it's a hard balance to find, you know, because you do want to have the content of your show. Like, you guys want to actually talk about music. I want to actually talk about X-Men. And so knowing what's going to be the most engaging to a listener, especially after it goes through edits, like, that's hard. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't, and usually you're too close to the material to even be able to tell.
No, your audience is pretty substantial, and it seems pretty consistent. Like, it's grown pretty steadily, and they're with you from what I can see. Do you get a lot of feedback from that audience? You hear from the people that are listening to your show often, and does that have any impact on how you shape it?
We do hear a lot from our listeners, yeah, through email and Tumblr and comments on our blog and Twitter and, like, freaking everything. I actually feel really bad because it's more than we can get back to people about. Like, I wish I could answer every single email.
That's how I feel about this show's email. I mean, I don't even mention that it exists anymore. It's such a burden.
It's just descending from above. It's really sort of a sword of Damocles.
It is, just hanging there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Most of them are from Adam and Eve. And all the cool spam I got us so much spam.
Yeah, our spam folder is bursting.
Thank you, listeners. Favorite spam headline ever. Actually, I have two. They're related. One was knock down walls with your monster cock.
Oh, I was gonna say it's got to be cock related.
That's just so vivid. You know, it's like a Kool-Aid Man kind of thing.
Sure.
And the other relatedly,
but don't
was,
take it out in your own home because you want to keep the walls in your own home.
Right. No, you go over to other people's houses and just knock down their walls, and there are lawsuits.
Cock knock 'em.
Gets very complex.
But the other relatedly
was use your dick to hit people, which again, that's a very vivid mental image.
No, don't do that.
No, don't. There are so many reasons not to do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Use your balls to hypnotize someone instead. Then you can do whatever you want to them you can put your dick on them whenever, wherever you'd like.
Yeah. I mean, there's some consent issues here, but from a practical standpoint,
sure.
You know.
It's ethically reprehensible.
But the hypnotic power of testicles cannot be denied.
Exactly. The pendulous swinging.
Use your dick to open the door to your mind.
Use your dick to stop the door from shutting.
Oh, man. It's like metadixical.
Exactly. Or to, like, prop it open while you're bringing the groceries in.
It's like an extra limb just waiting for you.
Just jam it under there. Great spam. But, yeah, are there some specific ways where feedback has sort of shaped the way that you guys plan the show?
Less the content of the show itself, although sometimes we'll have people recommend like some story they super love that we've never heard of, but a lot of it's just been from, X-Men is like an inherently political comic. That's just the nature of the beast. It's about social politics and identity politics and social justice. And so a lot of the fandom of X-Men and a lot of our listeners are people who fall outside like your standard quote unquote normal demographic. People who are, you know, not white, people who are queer, people who are GASP women. And so as somebody who is not any of those things, I fuck up a lot. I'll use phrasing that I didn't realize comes off as really shitty because it's just something I've never had to deal with. That right there has actually been hugely helpful when listeners are like, hey, so dude, when you're talking about the demographic I'm part of, maybe you could like phrase it this way instead of the other way, because the other way sucks for this reason. Like, I genuinely appreciate that.
Yeah, that's interesting. How have you incorporated that into the content of the show? So, you know, you're tethered to this timeline that you're talking about, which exists, and you're kind of retelling it and providing some context there. But where do you take those opportunities to explore the kind of the social metaphor or of what's happening in the comic line?
I mean, honestly, whenever we can. Like, X-Men is...
You don't shy away from it. You steer into
it. No, we lean in hard. Like, that's been part of the show from the start. And, you know, the comic itself has done that more and less at different eras. But even when X-Men ignores social issues, like, by choosing to ignore social issues, it's still engaging with them. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the comic in terms of when it came out, if you look at the comic in terms of the opportunities it didn't take as well as the ones it does take in a given era, like, that's interesting. That's like a window into how people were looking at the world, how people were looking at identity, how people were looking at oppression in any given era. Like, we're about to get to the point where the legacy virus shows up, which was very much a metaphor, maybe too generous a term. It was pretty on the nose,
yeah. Yeah.
But a metaphor for AIDS.
Space AIDS.
Yes. Space,
specifically.
Yeah. Or clone time travel AIDS also. It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah. But
which,
you know,
is like feline AIDS.
Yeah.
Or bird AIDS.
Mm-hmm. Freaking bird AIDS. Oh, I would say it's the worst, but no it's really not. But, yeah, so it's kind of cool seeing like how AIDS was looked at in 1992, how gay people were looked at who were assumed to be, you know, the center of this epidemic and the cause, even maybe morally according to jackasses, versus how we see it now. That's fascinating. Like, looking at X-Men as a time machine to go back to different social viewpoints, comparing that to 2017. That's rad as shit.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Not to jump ahead of your own timeline, but I'm just curious, as someone who consumes comics, have you seen comic books now, after they've become a little bit more mainstream than they were in 1991, have you seen them begin to steer away from those issues? Are they incorporating them more and taking them on head on? How is having a bigger audience for comics impacted the way writers are approaching these sensitive subjects, potentially sensitive subjects?
It's really a mixed bag. I mean, if I wanted to oversimplify, I would say that the more mainstream comics like Marvel and DC have shied away from them more, whereas you're seeing more of that in indie comics. And certainly you do see a lot more looks at social justice and stuff like that in mm-hmm. indie comics, but then you have, like, in X-Men Gold right now, a mutant deportation act, which is a clear parallel for the shit that's going on, like, in the immediate present day.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like it or hate it, Captain America turning into a Nazi and American ideals kind of being turned on their head in a time where, well, it's not a direct parallel, but there are certainly some parallels to be drawn. And so...
Yeah, and as a comic fan, it's hard to see my kid running around in Captain America outfits now.
Yeah, well, he got de-Nazied, you know, so that's
good. Oh, did he? Okay, I'm not caught up yet, but yeah, that makes sense. I knew it would happen eventually.
It's like a questionable decision to, at a time when we really need, like, this is what America should be about symbols, to turn one of them into a Nazi. Okay, Hydra technically, but let's be real. Hydra are Nazis.
Yeah, Hydra's super Nazis.
Yeah.
I know this would be just kind of your opinion, and it's not something that can be definitive, but are comic book creators and writers known for... like a sort of a subtle take on these things? Is that a medium that's always embraced a subtle and sort of nuanced look at political or social issues?
Again, totally a mixed bag. I mean, sometimes you do get that subtlety. I mean, honestly, X-Men's a pretty good microcosm for that. Sometimes it's a nice little subtle take on, you know, Larry Bodine, a kid who's a mutant himself, but he gets bullied and keeps it a secret and then tries to make friends by making fun of mutants himself. And then sometimes it's the legacy virus. So I don't know. I mean, You're going to see both. Like, comics as a medium, it's as big as film as a medium, you know? Mm-hmm. You have multiple genres, you have multiple styles within. So I guess my unsatisfying answer is totally varies, and sometimes the subtle stuff is what works, and other times you do need to just hit it with a great big symbolism hammer so that people get it, or so that you can just have, like, catharsis from superheroes doing the right thing in a way that you don't have the power to do.
It does seem like it's a medium that has a unique opportunity to span a lot of different subject matters and handle and approach subjects from a lot of different perspectives. It's a visual storytelling medium. So you can do a lot with that format and be expressive in a lot of different ways. So that's interesting.
Totally, yeah.
What's your favorite part about comic books? What's the thing that brought you to them in the first place and keeps you loving them after all these years?
Oh, man. You know, it's hard to even know why I started reading comics because I grew up on them. Like, my dad was really, really into them. And so for me, they were just part of the fiction that was out there. Mm-hmm. I think what I enjoyed is that comics are halfway between books and movies in some ways. Like, you have a visual component. You know what a character is supposed to look like. But you still have to fill in the blanks. You still have to go from panel to panel. You have to turn two-dimensional static images into the kind of like three-dimensional moving narrative that we think of when we think of life. And so I enjoyed that it both gives you enough in the way of visual seeds to get your imagination going, mm-hmm. but then lets you fill in the blanks from there. For me, it was always a best of both worlds kind of thing. And like, I've only started being like any sort of a comics critic because of the show. That was something that my podcasting partner Jay actually taught me completely. They used to be an editor for many, many years, and they still do that freelance. And so seeing the craft now hasn't really changed my opinion. I just love that you get a little bit of the visual, but not, you know, not necessarily too much. Not that there's anything wrong with film, but I like that it's a different take. It's a different balance.
Oh, speaking of film, what's your least favorite X-Men movie?
X-Men 3. Fuck X-Men 3.
Yeah, X-Men 3 was pretty bad.
That is a travesty. Cyclops is the most important X-Men. Okay, you know, Wolverine, yes, he's more popular, but Cyclops is central to Xavier's dream, and they fucking kill him off camera and barely mention it afterward. And they take the Dark Phoenix saga, which is all about, you know, female power and agency, and turn it into Jean just glowering real hard at things until Wolverine stabs her. Oh, I hate that movie so much.
Plus, at the end of X-Men 2, when they tease the Dark Phoenix saga with that underwater like Phoenix thing as it pulls away, like that sets you up so perfectly and it primes the pump for like huge expectations, and they really just shit all over that story. And this is coming from someone who doesn't really know the comic book line very well. I have my X-Men knowledge is basically Ultimate X-Men and the cartoon from the 90s, but even I was like built up and like had an emotional connection to that very end and was deeply disappointed by 3.
We're going to get another shot. I mean, the next movie is X-Men Dark Phoenix. This time it's Sophie Turner as Jean, who I think is a good Jean. I liked all the kids in X-Men Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. The movie had its flaws. The kids were not those flaws.
Didn't see X-Men Apocalypse. I heard a little rough.
It
wasn't the best one.
I would watch it. The good parts for me were absolutely good enough to make up for the bad parts. Days of Future Past is still my favorite of the main X movies. It felt the most like X-Men.
Mm-hmm. I think I like First Class the best. I like that 60s throwback.
First Class
was
good.
Style.
Yeah. And that was what, Matthew Vaughn did it, I think?
So, yeah.
Yeah, did a damn fine job. But I got to say, the two kind of more spin-off-y, we have our own feel movies, Deadpool and Logan. I have issues with Deadpool, but that was a great movie, and Logan was fucking excellent.
Yeah.
Logan
was
great.
Excellent.
Have you seen the Rogue cut of Days of Future Past?
You know, I actually haven't. I have it on my bookshelf, and I saw the original so many times that I just never got around to seeing the Rogue cut.
What is the Rogue cut?
It's got extra scenes that involve Rogue.
Yes.
That changed the entire movie.
The cover is red for that one. That's the other difference I know of because it's on my shelf.
Yeah. Oh, is Rogue not in the theatrical cut?
I haven't seen it in so long. I don't remember if she's in it a little bit or not at all.
I think she's not in it at all. Yeah, because in the Rogue cut, Xavier and Magneto have to like go off to a different place to find her.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What's your favorite comic movie, regardless of property?
The Rocketeer.
Oh, The Rocketeer. Disney's The Rocketeer.
It was pretty damn fantastic.
Oh, it's just, again, like anything that is that earnest, that wears its heart on its sleeve like that, and just that has so much fun with itself, I'm going to love. And that is an underloved classic. I don't know why it isn't incredibly popular. I heard they're making a sequel all these decades later, apparently, so cautious optimism there. But that original, like, I wouldn't change a goddamn thing about it.
I know. You get a Zeppelin in it.
Right?
A Zeppelin fight?
You get
amazing.
People punching Nazis. I never get sick of people punching Nazis.
No, never.
No.
Never. Well, we have time for, I think, one more song from you, Miles. What was the third track that you brought this evening?
So I think I mentioned in one of our preparatory messages that this is not a local track, but it is local to my heart. I couldn't do this show and not do one of the greatest pieces of music ever created by mankind, the theme song to the 1990s X-Men animated series.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Let me throw a little wrench in this. I have for you a cover of the X-Men theme song by a South African violin player. who plays a doomy, heavy version of it on violin.
This is one of the most exciting things I've ever had told to me in my life. I want to listen to this right now.
We're going to listen to it right now.
Was fucking incredible,
that
and
really
I love
was
it
incredible.
So much.
That's Sophie Marlin from South Africa. Definitely check out her Bandcamp page. She does an amazing cover of the Slayer song. It warms my heart. It's amazing. She's great.
Oh man, and I love that she had like her own different take on that. Like it's mostly the same. It mostly captures that same energy that the original theme does, and that same tension and bittersweetness. Also, yeah, you were mentioning.
Yeah.
But then there's that sort of slower interlude in the middle, and that just has that feeling of hope against all odds, like even better than the original theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like that captures the feeling of the comic almost more than the cartoon. Like
and
nearly
those
mournful,
super death metal drums.
Yeah, mournful. That's a good word for it. And you gotta have that. The X-Men are always at their best when their backs are up against a wall. You know, if they're winning all the time, it doesn't feel like X-Men. It has to feel kind of shitty, just like Spider-Man has to feel like everything's going wrong all the time, or else it's not itself. So
it's weird when it's not.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, consider me blown the fuck away.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, that's a success then. Well, Miles, thank you so much for coming on the show. I feel like we could talk to you for several more hours, but we are just about out of time. The show is Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. I'm sure all of our listeners know about it, but if you don't, please check it out. Subscribe however you listen. I assume that you're available on multiple platforms. I subscribe through iTunes, but I'm sure people can find you elsewhere.
Yep, all the usual suspects, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, custom podcatchers, whatever. Or you could stream from our website. I wouldn't recommend it, but you totally could.
Yeah. So everyone should download the show, but I know you guys have been getting out on the road a little bit more. You guys have been doing more interviews with the high-profile writers and doing some live events. What's the best way for listeners to keep track of things you're up to outside the podcast itself?
The most immediate way, probably that's Twitter. We are Explain the X-Men without the E at the beginning on Twitter, and we post probably way too much. So if there's a thing about us, it will be on there.
Fantastic. Well, everyone give that a follow and be sure to subscribe to the show. It's well worth it. Even if you're a novice like myself, you'll find something to enjoy. So, Miles, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a blast. Really, really enjoyed it.
Huge, huge thank you for that. That's awesome. Yeah.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We couldn't do it without you, and we wouldn't even want to.
We
appreciate you jumping in to listen. If this is your first episode, welcome, and we hope you enjoyed yourself, and we hope you come back. If you're a return listener, thank you again for passing this along to your friends and relatives.
And shout out to all our friends and family listening in Michigan and Indiana.
Yeah.
And hey, Indiana, listen more.
Yeah, Indiana. Let's pick What's up the slack.
On? What's going on, Indiana?
My family doesn't rally behind it, I guess, you know. No,
they hate our swears.
Forgotten boy. Yeah, so too many swears, they said. Too many swears. But if you're the kind of person who likes swears, we like you. And so thanks for listening again to this episode of Hot Garbage. Andy, take us home.
Oh, man. I got to play some Praetorians on the show. The Praetorians are a three-piece rap group of, I mean, you could call it nerd rap, but it's so not nerd rap. This is like Art of Warfare, like crazy boom bap fucking crazy hip-hop, man. It's like what Wu-Tang was talking about, but like acted out in real armor made by their friends. This is this group is composed of
Keelan King, I get it,
Sean Wynn, and Desmond Clark. Desmond lives in Chicago these days, but the other two guys are Portland guys, and you should definitely check out their new album, and you should check out the video for Fear, the song I'm gonna play, because it's fucking amazing, and they did a fucking really cool job with this shit. So
and we we'll check you out next week on Hot Garbage. See you then.
This fear, like the fear of noise, is inborn.
I ain't been the same since I severed my first head. Thinking about the nexus, I watched him dry bled. His comrades were tied up and gagged. Tears in his eyes and vomit dripping from the rag. The pupils were begging for mercy to make it pain so he could die in a hurry. No chance because I revel in a slow kill. I'm God and done is my holy will. Stench was foul, released his bowels. Imagine how he felt as he watched me smile. Muffled sounds of waste cause unheard exactly. I cut his tongue, those were last words. Those were last words. Those were last words. Those were last words.
You got it, we coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your end. You got it, we coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your end.
Close the window, close the window. I'm afraid.
My room is tightly closed. The windows are barred, nailed down. Nothing can get in. Nothing.
We live in closed houses, behind locked doors and bolted shutters, not daring to close our eyes.
Run. I prefer to hunt to the slaughterhouse. And when I catch you, I will slowly pull your organs out. I can hear your breath escaping from your open mouth. You rarely ever joke about enemies cause we choke them out. Your whole battalion run for cover, they mortified. Before they died, they should have made sure that their guts were fortified. We step out of your nightmares to right there. We turning all of your slight fears to white hairs. Open treachery followed by open neckery. Reckon we look at death as a redirection to destiny. Presently holding weapons effectively on the precipice of wrecking this facade of extended mortal existence. You can't hide, we live inside your psyche. Might be time for you to recuse yourself from fighting. Lightning strikes and thunder pull you down from underneath the ground, ripping your physical form asunder.
Yeah, you got it, we coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your end. You got it, we coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your end.
He isn't human, I tell you. He's in league with the devil.
He never works and never begs, and yet he appears well fed always.
That's so,
he does. But what does he live on then?
He'd kill her just like he did all the rest. And now he's gonna kill me. I'm a doomed man. He'll kill me.
This is all my- Armageddon. Apocalyptic bloodletting. Peep through my eyes, you can see your strength bearing. Empty like a strategy, battle me, that's a tragedy waiting to happen. It's like you begging for the casualties. You had the chance to repent, but you regurgitated. Now you gon' swallow your words, I bet they coward tasting. This is death by design, this is art I'm making. Renaissance in my mind, but this is body breaking. Listen, we don't take prisoners, no retreat, no surrender. You antagonize killers. You paved the way for pain and didn't learn from it. Now the field is stained and troop numbers plummet. Couldn't see the forest for the trees. Now we at your gates and you'll be dying on your knees. You know we got gods to appease. Now experience the famine and the plague that is me. Me. Me.
We coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your ending. You got it, we coming to get it. Take your position, you cannot defend it. We right behind you, we know that you win it. You know it's coming, prepare for your ending.
I'm afraid.
Afraid? Afraid of what, Rick?
Our friends, neighbors that we've known for years, drained of their life's blood, found dead in bed, lifeless skeletons of skin and bone.
Thank you.